From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Right about now, countless orchid plants in homes everywhere, plants perhaps gifted to their owners or others we bought for ourselves on an impulse when they were in bloom last year. They could be coming back into flower, but maybe they aren't. Where did we fail? Is it the wrong orchid for our conditions, or did we do wrong by the right orchid? Oh dear. So I've invited Greg Griffiths, the orchid grower for Longwood Gardens in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, where the annual Orchid Extravaganza runs late January to late March, to give us an Orchid 101, because I think it's time we improved our track records. Greg Griffiths' own orchid history is an inspiration. He first became aware of orchids in 2009. Studying music education at Westchester University, he lived close to Longwood and attended the 2010 orchid show there, where he purchased his first plant. Well, you know what happened. One plant quickly became 20, and Greg was hooked. He has since worked for Parkside Orchid Nursery, Hilo Orchid Farm in Hawaii, and eventually, beginning at the start of 2015, found himself back where it all began. Greg became the orchid grower at Longwood. He also teaches the garden's popular beginning orchid class. The theme of our conversation today is 6 orchids everyone should own. A bold suggestion, I know, but I think we're up to the task, gardeners. So welcome to the program, Greg Griffiths. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay. I'm so grateful that you could take the time getting ready for the Orchid Extravaganza, which starts momentarily. So thanks for that. And I think I read that orchids are one of the oldest collections at Longwood since like 1922 or something, yes?
Yes, they are. They were gifted by one of the relatives of Pierre Dupont, about 2,000 plants in the early 1900s.
Wow, and today there are how many thousands of orchid taxa or, you know, individual types of plants there?
Well, at Longwood we have about 6,100 right now.
Oh my goodness.
And we're somewhere in the 2,000 range of different taxa.
Wow, so 2,000 different taxa and 6,000 and something different plants, and you're the orchid grower, so that means you're responsible. The buck stops with you on those plants, yes?
That's right, yep.
Oh, dear. And what kinds of things are you getting ready with the show? I mean, it has quite lavish displays, yes? It's not just bringing out those orchids. It's more than that.
Right. Actually, our collection only feeds the collection display, which is on year-round. So for this show, we're bringing in plants from all over the country. We have boxes coming in from Hawaii and deliveries from all over the place to bring in plants especially for the show. We actually just had some boxes arrive from Taiwan. Just today.
Oh my goodness. So you're making like archways and hanging things and all kinds of, you won't tell me, but that's okay. We'll see on the website. So let's zoom back down to the sort of home orchid scale. And as I said in the introduction, things can really go wrong when we bring home either the wrong plant, whether it's an orchid or any other plant, for our own conditions, or when we treat a well-suited plant badly. But before we meet the 6 orchids that you're convinced that we're all going to buy after hearing this podcast, is there any general, sort of, Greg, is there any general, before you adopt an orchid, kind of overall advice, you know? Okay, let's start there.
I think the first thing I like telling people is that orchids aren't hard, they're just different. Growing an orchid requires a different mindset, especially when it comes to watering. A lot of times people are used to growing plants that grow in soil that just kind of stay evenly moist all the time, whereas orchids like to dry out a little more between waterings, but at the same time don't want to get desiccated. And so that watering aspect is probably the most important part of orchid growing.
Okay. So that's the thing that I have to have in mind, and I'm sure some of them are slightly different in their watering needs. But it's thinking differently from the way I've treated other plants.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So should we go plant by plant? Do you want to tell us a little bit more about how to grow with the illustrations of your 6 plants that we all must have?
Sure, we can definitely do that.
Okay.
And we're kind of going in order of ease of cultivation in your house.
Oh, good. So we'll start with the simple ones. Okay,
we'll start
good.
With the easiest ones.
Okay.
And that, which is a good place, I think, for everyone to start.
Okay.
So our first one is a Phalaenopsis,
okay.
Which is the moth orchid, which is what you'll find in your local grocery store these days, which is mass-produced.
Right.
So the plant in particular that we're talking about is Phalaenopsis sogovivian, and it's a miniature Phalaenopsis. And what's great about these is they're compact. You can fit a good number of them on your windowsill because they only grow maybe 6 to 8 inches in diameter.
Oh.
And they produce quite a few stems that are branched and carry tons of flowers. It can look like a cloud of flowers above the plant.
Okay, so it's been bred specifically down from sort of the general species down to a more compact but very floriferous specimen.
Exactly.
Okay.
And today's Phalaenopsis are fairly easy to grow. Basically, they just want to grow in a slightly shady location, so like an east window is a good window to grow them in. And they want to be, basically I tell people, if you're comfortable with the temperature, most of the orchids you're going to find commonly in the marketplace are going to be comfortable too.
Okay.
So for a Phalaenopsis, that's between like 60 and 80 degrees. And then Phalaenopsis like to grow on the moist side, so you don't want them to dry out completely. But when maybe they're about halfway dry, that's when you want to water.
What kind of medium are they growing in that I'm watering? And so I'm trying to, I just want to get a visual, sort of conjure an image of what I'm doing here.
Sure. So most of them are either produced in sphagnum moss,
uh-huh.
which is a very good quality, dense moss that is harvested that they're packed in. And so it acts as one unit. And sphagnum moss can be easy to grow in at home because it's pretty easy to judge how dry it is. When the moss is dry, it's lightweight, it feels dry to the touch. You know, you can tell. I usually tell people to wait until the surface of the moss is just barely drying out before you water again.
Okay.
Or they'll come in a bark mix, which is what we grow most orchids in. So picture, you know, half-inch size bark chunks mixed in with maybe some charcoal or some perlite. That the plant is planted in. And so in a bark mix, I think the easiest way to judge watering is by weight. So what I suggest is that people soak the plant down, really run water all the way through the pot until it's soaked, and then feel how heavy it is. And then maybe every day for a week, pick it up until they think it's just about dry again so that they can feel the different weights of as it moves along from being wet to dry.
Okay. Okay, so... You know, I've had friends who grew orchids who kind of dunked their plants until they stopped bubbling. It doesn't sound like you recommend that. Do you know what I'm saying? The medium,
yeah.
Not the whole plant.
Right,
but the,
yeah.
But the medium. Until it sort of, it took in some water, it stopped bubbling, and then they would lift it back out of a bucket of water or whatever. And that's how they watered as opposed to watering from the top. But you're saying that we could put water through like we would with a watering can or whatever. From the top down, yeah?
Right, exactly. And you can dunk them, too. That's fine. Some
okay.
people do that for water conservation. Either way works fine. The point is just getting the media really wet when you water.
Okay. And do I have a saucer under these? But it definitely doesn't want to have standing water in it, even though these like it a little moister than some other orchids. I still don't want it ever to have, quote, wet feet, yeah?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
You never want an orchid sitting.
Okay, so I can put a saucer to protect the surface of my, you know, in my home, but I don't want it to be a reservoir.
Right.
Okay.
And you don't want to plant them in a decorative pot either. Better to have them planted in a plastic pot that you sit inside your decorative pot.
Okay, so you use it as a cash pot then. The decorative pot, excuse me.
Correct. Yeah.
So what's number two?
So number two is Oncidium charibaby. And the big deal about Oncidium charibaby is that it smells like chocolate. It's a pretty, about 1 inch tall, reddish with some white markings flower, and it smells like chocolate. And it can be fairly strong, but it's never overpowering, which is a very nice thing. So Oncidiums, they're kind of the definition of intermediate. They like intermediate light, so an east window, a slightly shaded south window, will work just fine. They like intermediate temperature. Again, this is really, if you're comfortable, they're comfortable. Anywhere from 50 to 90 will do okay by most Oncidiums.
Wow. What is the size of the flower? Like, give me a visual on those flowers of an Oncidium.
So the way the flower's shaped, the lip is the biggest part. These are called the dancing lady orchid.
Yes.
So it kind of looks like it has a big skirt. And so they're probably about an inch plus tall and maybe 3/4 of an inch wide. And they kind of make the shape of, say, the human figure with arms and legs outspread.
Okay.
And then they have that skirt shape.
And colors?
Kind of at the bottom.
Range of colors?
Well, in Oncidium, the colors range from everything from white to yellow to purple to pink. And reds. The breeding these days has pushed colors, all over the map. So in the genus Oncidium and in the intergenerics, you can get quite a variability of color.
Okay. And Cherry Baby particularly is?
It's kind of like a dark red with some white markings.
I like these. These are beautiful. These always attract my attention when I'm in the local greenhouse, the local nursery's greenhouse. This is what I thought. I wonder, I'm going to now go and look and put my nose in them and see if they smell like
chocolate.
Absolutely.
I often tell people to smell anything they see in the marketplace because even though proportionately it's only a small number of orchids that smell, most of what's in production does have a fragrance.
Oh, interesting.
So I always suggest sticking your nose in things.
Okay. So number 3 on my list of things I'm going out to adopt after hanging up from this call
is what we call a Phalaenopsis-type dendrobium.
Okay.
And so this is the most common type. They have long-lasting flowers that come out from kind of tall, skinny bulbs. And the flowers, actually, this is often seen as an edible garnish. Or this is the most common type of cut flower orchid. So they're very attractive. They come in all sorts of colors, from green to purple to blue to white to pink and purple. And the type is just, they're pretty much all the same because of the hybridizing. So these like to grow bright, warm, even hot, and on the drier side. They want to dry out more quickly between watering.
Okay, so they want to dry out more quickly between waterings, which doesn't mean that we deprive it of a thorough watering when we do water it?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
When you water, you always want to water thoroughly.
Okay, that's important, I think. Because, sometimes I think we think when someone tells us drier, we get the wrong impression.
Right, yes.
Yeah,
And, there's a point in saying, too, that orchids love water just like every other plant. It's just the amount of water and how much they stay moist that is different.
Okay.
They all want the right amount of water for them. It's just something different than what we might be used to.
Okay, so this is a dendrobium, but it's a Phalaenopsis type of dendrobium.
Right.
Okay, and these are really long-lasting flowers, too, yes?
Yes, they are. These flowers can last a good 2 months.
Okay. Generally speaking, orchids, that's one of their charms for the sort of gift, either impulse purchase to bring home instead of cut flowers or for gifting, is that they do have such a long shelf life. I mean, you get to enjoy the flowers for such a long period of time relative to a lot of other things.
Right, absolutely. Phalaenopsis can last anywhere from 3 to 5 months.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So who's next?
So next is what we're going to cover our Cattleya group with a related genus called Brassavola. So Brassavola nodosa is the lady of the night. It has white flowers, and they're a little thin, but they have this big white splayed-out lip, and they're fragrant at night.
Oh.
Especially if you live in a place that gets really nice warm summers or is semi-tropical, people often have big plants of these. At around 8 o'clock at night during the summer when it's flowering or really any time of year that it flowers, it's very fragrant.
So Cattleyas, were those the orchids that were like corsage type, like the traditional corsage type orchids?
Yes, they were.
So Brassavola looks kind of like that?
Brassavola doesn't look quite like them. It's got a much maybe thinner shape, you might say. But the advantages of Brassavola nodosa are that it grows easily, and it grows fast, and it blooms easy.
Okay.
So it likes bright light and warmth, and it can handle drying out a little bit more. So this is a good plant maybe to put outside during the summer. Not in full sun, obviously, but a little shaded and just keep it from drying out too much, and it can perform very well for you.
Okay. So that's Brassavola nodosa, which is a Cattleya relative.
Right.
Okay. And next?
Next comes one of my favorite genus, which is Paphiopedilum, the lady slippers.
Yes.
Yeah, and ours is Paphiopedilum spicerianum. And spicerianum is quite an interesting flower. It has green petals and a green pouch and a white dorsal sepal with a pink stripe down the middle.
You're talking all that botanical talk now, Greg. I'm just teasing you. Go ahead. So does this have solid green leaves, or are the leaves mottled as well? What's the foliage like?
The leaves on Spicerianum are usually green. Mm-hmm. Some of them you'll see might have a little like maroon striping or stippling along the edges. But on the whole, the leaves are generally green.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of a bizarre looking flower. But the nice thing about it is that it's easy to grow. And if you want to know the secret to growing paths, here it is. This is the secret. Is that they want to be evenly moist all the time.
Okay.
Never sopping wet and never completely dry. Now, how you do that, that's the trick.
I know. Are you going to tell us the trick? Because that's making me feel nervous, like I can't handle this plant. Evenly moist. Okay.
The good news is that orchids are generally are forgiving. So long as you're not too rough on them.
Okay.
But again, this is something that I judge by weight. So I'll feel that pot when it's soaking wet, and I'll feel it when it's dry. And then somewhere in the middle of that, when I'm feeling like it's about halfway wet, halfway dry, that's when I want to water it again.
Okay. All right. So you're going by weight.
Correct.
It's the same way I pick a winter squash among the many at the farm stand, the one that's heaviest by weight. Do you know what I mean? You learn to feel things. Yeah, and I think that's a good point, is that gardeners, and particularly with plants like orchids, they need to learn that, weight, the relative weight to size of the pot with the particular medium in it.
Right, and then that doesn't have to be a particularly intimidating thing. In general, most orchids that if you water them once a week will be happy.
Okay.
That will do. But the more you get that weight down, the better your watering gets, the better your results will be.
And lucky number six?
Yeah, so we went with Cymbidium. And most commonly in the marketplace, what you'll find is a cold flowering Cymbidium. And usually what happens is you find people have these big plants and they have grassy leaves and they're like, I got it. It was beautiful, and it's never flowered again, and I don't know why.
I know. I think I had one. No, I know. I know I had one, and it was fabulous when it came to me, and it wasn't so fabulous after. And I think that I didn't do the right thing with giving it the cool that it needed at a certain time of year. I think I didn't. Yeah. Do these need to rest or something?
Yeah. What they really need is a colder winter to tell them that it's time to flower. And so, unfortunately, usually you're not told that when you buy one of these. So what you basically should do is, it's a good plant to put out in the summer. Put it out in the summer and then leave it till just before the first frost. Even when the nights are down in the 40s, that's just fine for it. And those cold temperatures will tell it to flower.
Wow.
And then what you want to do is, you don't want to pull it into a really hot environment. A lot of people will keep these on like a porch that maintains an above freezing temperature in the 40s, or a room that's a little cooler, or if your house is staying in the mid 60s, that's okay too. But you want to leave them out till they get that kind of the beginning of the cold season, so that they know it's time to flower.
It's interesting. That's kind of Clivias. I grow, some big old pots of Clivias, and I make sure that they get that signal. I grow them in a mudroom, and my mudroom is bright, but of course, with those, I'm depriving them of water sort of as a secondary trigger, but at that time of year. But they really need that to sort of say, okay, it's time to go about our other business now, or begin going about our other business now. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So that would be a good spot for the Cymbidiums.
It would be, yep. And Cymbidiums aren't hard to grow. Basically, just keep them moist all the time. They're semi-terrestrial, so they grow in the earth, and they like the access to moisture. And then you can put them in bright light and, feed them and keep them warm all summer long, and they'll grow like weeds. And then hopefully you get a real good flowering in the fall with that.
But this
weather.
Cool thing with this trigger we need to do. So
In
the last, three or so minutes, I want to talk about we didn't say anything about feeding, which I know perplexes people, and we didn't say anything about okay, so when it's done flowering, what do I do with the remnant, you know, that the spike, the stem that held the flower? Can you tell us about some of those particulars?
Sure. So let's talk about fertilizer first.
Okay.
Fertilizing can get really complicated, but it doesn't have to be. Basically, the rule is to use a balanced fertilizer. So when you look at the numbers on the package, 20-20-20 or 10-10-10 will do just fine,
mm-hmm.
something along those lines. And then you're going to use it at a quarter strength and water basically three waterings in a row with fertilizer, and then the fourth one use plain water to flush it out.
Okay. So you don't get buildup of the salts in the medium. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because they won't tolerate that too well.
My friend Andrew always used to say to me, Margaret, it's weekly, weekly. The W-E-E-K-L-Y-W-E-A-K-L-Y. Weekly, weekly.
Yep, that is the exact thing that we use.
Oh, you orchid people.
It's true.
It's a cult, I'm telling you. It's a cult.
It very well might be.
So we're doing that 3 out of the 4 weeks, quarter strength of a dilute fertilizer.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And then what about the remnant of what held the flowers? What do I do with that?
In most cases, when that inflorescence is done, you can cut it back to where it, you know, came out of the plant. But in the case of a phalaenopsis, you kind of have two choices. On the phalaenopsis stem, there's little bracts, little papery sheaths that
yes.
enclose the stem.
Yes.
And each one of those is a growth point. So if you would like more flowers, and you're okay with maybe pushing your plant a little or stressing it a little, you can cut back to one of those, to right above one of those nodes, and usually we recommend you count up 3 from the bottom and then cut above that one.
Oh, count up 3 from the bottom. I didn't know that. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Mostly that's just so your stem doesn't wind up being really long.
Okay.
And that node should be fairly active. And you can do that, and most of the phalaenopsis these days are so aggressive that they can handle a second flowering without a problem. Now, it doesn't guarantee one, but it might help suggest to the plant that it does that. Really like the plant and you're like, I want this plant to go back to growing so it's nice and strong and healthy for next year's flowering, you could cut it all the way back to the bottom.
Now, I always try to reassure myself the first year after, like the first anniversary that I've had a plant, is that it's just been, this is the first time it's trying to get used to a year with me. It had a different conditions in its earlier life, and so it might skip a year. Is that true? Am I just deluding myself? Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I think after greenhouse conditions in its younger years, and then it spends a year with me, and it maybe doesn't flower.
Yeah, I think there's absolute logic to that. And actually, there might be something else going on there that they might not be aware of, which is if you get a phalaenopsis, in particular the moth orchid from a grocery store, we can control those and force them to flower whenever we want.
Oh.
So if you bought it at a time of year when it's not naturally flowering,
oh,
it might have to wait until its next natural flowering
okay.
to flower again.
Okay, because I've noticed that with the fowls. I've noticed that it's like they don't seem to be on the same schedule as when I saw it flower. But you're saying it might have been triggered into growth artificially.
Exactly.
Into flowering, yeah.
They regularly flower in our winter time. So late fall, early winter, they start sending up their spikes, and about this time of year they're developing, and in a month or two they'll flower. But if they were forced out of season, say you got it flowering in the summer, it might skip flowering that winter just because it's flowered so close to that time.
Right.
And it might have to wait until the next year to kind of get back in rhythm.
All right. Well, I'm on the way to the garden center, Greg. Greg Griffiths from Longwood Gardens. Happy Orchid Extravaganza coming up. I'll have all the details on the transcript on the blog. It's so great to speak to you. Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay. And nice speaking to all of you. I hope you won't miss an episode. Be sure to subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at facebook.com/awaytogarden or on the blog at awaytogarden.com. Happy orchid growing meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.